she left with that person allegedly at 2:30 a.m., 7 o'clock a.m. the next morning, a very short distance away, probably a mile away if that, there's a Catholic church. And on the stairs of that church, it's called St. Clement's Catholic Church, they found her body. She had been beaten, raped, and strangled.
Is that church still standing today? Because I did do a Google search, and I did see a church there.
Same building. Yep. The bar is the same building, too. It's just a different bar. It was the Caboose Bar in that time, which it's now the pub at Wilton Manor. Apparently, Anna's sister says that there's still regulars that still go there from that time that knew her.
Wow, that's crazy to think about people going to the same bar for 40 years. And then to think that many of these patrons were probably in their 20s or 30s when this happened. The other bar patrons must have really cared a lot about Anna Marie.
Right. They were in their early 20s at the time, but still, yeah, it seems crazy. I don't see how it's possible. I don't know what occurred with the police department, but it seems like there was a lot of problems, apparently, with the Wilton Manor Police Department at the time. It was a lot of evidence. There was seminal fluid, apparently, pubic hair. Allegedly, they either can't find the evidence or the evidence is lost, which is perplexing because you're never allowed to throw away murder evidence. What the sister is telling me, and I haven't got confirmation yet, is that they said something to do with when they switched stations, but the Wilton Manor's police station was built in 2010, and I highly doubt anybody was throwing away murder evidence then. I'm hoping that it was misplaced.
Well, it doesn't sound like a large police department, so I find it really hard to believe that they would just lose such valuable evidence. I mean, do they have so many homicides that they would just lose evidence?
Very strange. And allegedly, Broward County took over their homicide investigations because of some disaster that happened there. I don't know the details, but it has to be somewhere. And there's DNA on that evidence, as well as there's a possibility that there's still a slide at the coroner's office with DNA.
Now, how far have you looked into this DNA evidence? Have you reached out to anyone in Florida?
I've reached out to Broward, have not heard back. The only thing I've done thus far, other than some backgrounds on some people involved, and some of them I know, I just contacted the genealogy site that's doing all the DNA. So if there is a slide of DNA, hopefully we can get it uploaded into a genealogy site to have it tested. And the only thing that they require is that the police department's on board with it. I was hoping to get some publicity on it like this prior to contacting them to say, hey, there's a rejuvenated interest here. If there is a slide of DNA, we can check that.
So you don't actually know if there is any DNA on this case that's available for testing?
Believe it or not, her sister Fran knows more than it seems everybody does. And I've seen this in emails and everything. She gave me all the emails between them. And she said her, in speaking with the coroner, they said they have a slide of seminal fluid or something to that effect that they could get DNA from.
This is Mark. Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. Before I get into this week's podcast episode, I would like to ask for your support. I'm looking for listeners that will help support the podcast by buying me a cup of coffee. If you can help support the podcast, I'm asking you to subscribe to my monthly Crime Coffee Club, which is only $5 per month. If you subscribe, I will share exclusive content with you. To support the podcast, please visit catchmykiller.com. and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. If you cannot donate to the podcast, that's fine. You can still also help by sharing these stories with your friends and families. We can solve many of these cases if the right person hears it and can provide the necessary tips to solve a case. And that's enough for the coffee business. This week's story involves a long and arduous journey for a woman named Fran Cubes. She's been trying to get justice for her sister, Anna Marie Mullen, who was brutally murdered nearly 40 years ago. After her discharge from the Air Force, 22-year-old Anna Marie Mullen returned to civilian life. She was a regular at the Caboose Bar in Wilton Manors, Florida. She knew everyone, and everyone knew her. On November the 6th, 1982, the young woman noticed a stranger in the bar. He wasn't regular, and no one knew him. Anna Marie sat next to him and engaged in a conversation with him. He then began buying her drinks. She became intoxicated. At 2:30 a.m., she left the bar with the man who had bought her drinks all night. He said that he would give her a ride home. She waved to the remaining customers and said goodnight to them. Little did they know they would never see their young friend alive again. She would be dead within several hours. A few hours later at 7 a.m., members of the St. Clement's Catholic Church began arriving for Mass. What they saw would shock them. A dead woman was found on the front steps of the church. She had been raped, beaten, and strangled. It was a horrific and brutal killing. The Wilton Manors Police Department soon arrived at the scene to investigate. The dead woman was identified as Anna Marie Mullen from Ashland, Massachusetts. Just a few hours earlier, she had been seen leaving the Caboose Bar, and now she was dead. Witnesses told the police about the stranger. He had arrived at the bar sometime during the afternoon, and he had stayed at the bar until he was seen leaving with Anna Marie. Several people agreed to go under hypnosis in an attempt to remember more details. It's believed that his name may have been Tony. He was nearly 6 feet tall and weighed around 200 pounds. He had dark hair and brown eyes. Unfortunately, a series of blunders have prevented the killer from being captured. The killer left behind semen that could have one day been tested for DNA. Unfortunately, all the evidence would either be misplaced or lost when Broward County took over the case from Wilton Manors PD. The file made it over to Broward County, but the physical evidence is missing. However, Fran Cube said she contacted the coroner's office and confirmed that they have a lone slide of DNA from the killer. But for unknown reasons, the DNA has never been sent out for testing. Fran believes that her sister's killer remains free because of incompetence on behalf of the Wilton Manors PD. But other than losing evidence, they had a more serious problem years ago. It turns out that a year before Anna Marie's homicide, a former Wilton Manors police officer named Gerard Schaffers was a serial killer who is believed to have killed at least 9 women. While in prison, Schaffers was stabbed to death by his cellmate. According to Fran, Wilton Manors PD no longer investigates homicide cases. Fran would eventually meet a retired Massachusetts police sergeant named Greg Fox and share her frustration about her sister's case with him. He became a private investigator and is now helping Fran find out who killed her sister. Greg even had a theory that Anna Marie could have been killed by a serial killer who once stalked the area looking for victims. But Fran and Greg both agree that it is possible that Anna Marie knew her killer. Although the other bar patrons didn't know the stranger, perhaps Anna Marie knew him. And just recently, a man named Tom reached out to Fran's niece. He said he was with Anna Marie the night that she died. When Fran spoke to him, she said he cried. She thinks that he knows something about what happened to her sister, but she couldn't get him to provide any details. Also, is it a coincidence that witnesses claimed the alleged killer's name was Tony? Could patrons have possibly confused the names? It could be an easy mistake to make. Fran said that she will never rest until her sister's killer has been identified. When you hear her voice, you will detect how the pursuit for her sister's killer has hardened her. For this story, I spoke to Anna Marie's younger sister, Fran Cubes, and retired police sergeant, Gregory Fox. Now on with Anna Marie's story.
Let me start off by asking you about Anna Marie. When was she born? And tell me about her as a sister.
Anna was an amazing big sister. She took care of 8 siblings and did a damn good job at that. We were all in foster care, but before we went there, she was the one that made sure that we ate. She made sure that we had whatever we needed. She was the kindest soul that you'd ever know. All of her friends, everybody that ever knew her, said that about her. So we were all separated at a very young age. We all went to relatives, like aunts and uncles. I went to an aunt in Boston. even though I lived in Boston, but like a suburb of Boston, you know, we're just separated from an orphanage. They just said, you got to get these kids. So they came and got us. That's how the family fell apart. They always tried to let us see each other and know each other, that we were sisters and brothers. And one thing my sister always said every time she saw us was, let me tell you something. Your name is Mullen. I am your sister. And don't you ever forget it, and that you're loved. Over the years, that is something she always said to us, me and my little brother. At the time, we were separated from all the other sisters and brothers. We were just really close as siblings. You could always trust and believe that Anna always had your back. Anna would do whatever it took to make sure that you had, whether it was a crumble of Parmesan cheese to eat, or a piece of bread, or whatever she needed to do, she got that for us. Because I'll tell you, if it, we wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for my sister. No doubt about that. I feel in my heart that I owe her, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her in those early years, making sure we had those little crumbs.
How much older was she than you?
We're all 2 years apart. So I want to say, Anna, I was born in 64 years, 4 years apart, exactly.
It's pretty sad that you didn't really get much time with your sister since she died at such a young age.
No, not at all. It was like, it's good to have someone in your family remind you that you might be with them, but remember where your bloodline is. Always remember, I'm your family, I'm your sister, and I love you. Those are the last words that she ever spoke to me in 1978. It was the last time I saw her.
Tell me more about when you last saw Anna Marie.
She was headed into the Air Force, and she came to visit, and she said, listen, I'm going to go away for a little bit, and know that, again, I'll always love you, and I'll always be here for you. And she said, if something happens to me, you know, tell Aunt Barbara that I want a funeral mass. That was disturbing. For her to say such a thing, she's going to the Air Force. I didn't know. I don't care what the hell's the Air Force. It was devastating news to find out that one of your loved ones had been murdered.
How did you learn about her death?
I was at my girlfriend's house. It was 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was helping her set up for her daughter's 7th birthday. And my aunt called me and said they had found my sister at a church, and I needed to go to Ashland. So I went to Ashland, and then the police had called the family and then told everybody what had happened. That's how we found out. They said it was a homicide.
When you first found out that she was deceased, did it shock you to find out that someone had killed her?
You could have knocked me over with a feather, because she was such a fun-loving, good-hearted soul. She didn't have an evil bone in her body. She just never had that. So for someone to do such a wretched thing to her was just mind-blowing.
What did law enforcement tell you about your sister's death?
We were told at first she was found at a church. Did she pass out at a church? Was she walking home and fell over at a church? We don't know. So then the police called the family to say she had been raped and murdered. When they were doing the autopsy, they found out, you know, that it was like strangulation, asphyxiation type of homicide.
From what I understand, she was last seen drinking at a bar with an unidentified man. Is that correct?
Nobody knew him, but Anna was familiar with the neighborhood people, law enforcement, a couple of factories. One of the factories that Anna worked at, would all those people would leave and then come to that specific bar. So she was well known. Everybody knew her and liked her there.
It sounds to me like the motivation for this crime was sexual assault. Do you know if any of her valuables were stolen?
It wasn't robbery, but there's another twist. In our hometown of Ashland, Framingham area, there was a robbery. And those people, known to us, then to somehow ended up in Florida. So my sister called home Anna and said that she was having an issue with a guy from Massachusetts, let's put it that way. So she wanted to leave Florida, but she had to tell my sister Mega something. That's what she told us. So she was going to go to that bar to She went to bed about twice that day, once at noon and once at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, she stayed. My sister Mega did go to the bar and try to make Anna leave with her, but Anna refused to leave with her. She was sitting with the guy. I want to say 7:18, something like that, in the morning. The police went to Anna's address and made notification that Anna had been found. My sister, of course, they called my family, and then they were going to put my sister, Mega, on a flight back to Boston because they felt like she was there that night for seeing this person, and they didn't want anything to happen to her. So they immediately put her on a flight and sent her back to Boston to be with family because she was absolutely distraught. So she came back. She couldn't even speak on it. We had a priest there for her because she was like, I couldn't get her to leave. I couldn't get Anna to leave. But survivor's guilt and how do you live with that is what's going on for her. I got involved in 1982 and I called the law enforcement agent in charge of, and I asked him specific questions. I got those answers. And then I started investigating this case for near 40 years. All I need is a law enforcement agent in Florida to look at this case. That's all I need. The police department that handled this case has been disbanded. They are no longer homicide. Broward County took the case over November 7th, 2012. Spoke with Broward County. You know, you get the, we got it, And, you know, they're not going to do anything. And I don't know if it's because they were told not to do anything. So we just do what we can do and follow every lead that we can come up with. And that's what we've been doing all these years.
And from what I understand, the police did collect a large DNA sample. Is that correct?
There was DNA everywhere. The cops confiscated all that DNA. The officer who was in charge of this case at the time said to me, we have so much DNA. Well, if technology catches up with us, this is a slam dunk case. That's what he said to me. We got this. Don't worry about it. As far as law enforcement goes. We tried for years begging and pleading with law enforcement to follow the leads that we were giving them. And other law enforcement agencies outside of Florida that we contacted about certain cases and certain familiarities and all those things, they called for us. Never got a response. They'd always call us back saying, sorry, couldn't get a response from them. So where does a family go when you can follow the lead right to somebody's door and the people you need to follow the lead ain't following nothing?
For this part of the story, I spoke to retired Sergeant Greg Fox to get his opinions and thoughts about this case from the viewpoint of a law enforcement official. I'd like to start off by asking you to tell me about yourself and how you got involved in this case.
I recently retired 2 years ago. Prior to that, about six years ago, in 2015, I was working as a sergeant when a resident came in and said that she had gotten an alarming email message from somebody. She showed me the Facebook message. I knew nothing of the case at the time. I don't think our department had any knowledge of it. Occurred in Florida. I'm in Massachusetts, where she's from. So the girl was what would be her sister. It's her sister's daughter. So somebody Facebook messaged her, a guy named Tom. He said, hi, I knew your sister. I was with her in the bar the night that she was murdered. And so she said, this isn't my sister, this is my aunt. She didn't even respond to him and brought it in kind of a panic. And she said, my aunt Fran has never let this go and has never stopped pushing to get it solved and gave me her contact info. I got in touch with Fran, who is Anna Marie's sister. And from there, I was involved officially at that time, but there was really not much we could do. And then into retirement, I told her that if I got a private investigator's license when I retired, I'd help her out.
So then you didn't start investigating this until after retirement. Now, can you give me some basic information about this case? From what I read, she was in a bar and some guy was buying her drinks. She didn't know this guy, and neither did anyone else at the bar. So they left together, and that was the last time that Anna Marie was ever seen alive. Does that sound about right?
Correct. She was a regular at the bar. She was allegedly at the bar and was being bought drinks from a guy that nobody recognized. And at some point, they witnessed him placing a pool, and I guess he racked the balls in a certain way he called a jersey rack. And then somebody witnessed him give an envelope on the bar to the bartender, and it had, they said the letter T may have said Tony with an I. And then they said the stamp was on the top left rather than the right, which was strange. And there was an address in, I think, Pompano Beach on the envelope. So it's actually in Northwest Pompano Beach. That's what it is.
And that's located in Florida. Is that correct?
Yes, it's very close by. She left with that person allegedly at 2:30 a.m., 7 o'clock a.m. the next morning, a very short distance away, probably a mile away, if that. There's a Catholic church, and on the stairs of that church, it's called St. Clement's Catholic Church, they found her body. She had been beaten, raped, and strangled.
Is that church still standing today? Because I did do a Google search, and I did see a church there.
Same building. Yep. The bar is the same building, too. It's just a different bar. It was the Caboose Bar in that time, which it's now the pub at Wilton Manor. Apparently, Anna's sister says that there's still regulars that still go there from that time that knew her.
Wow, that's crazy to think about people going to the same bar for 40 years. And then to think that many of these patrons were probably in their 20s or 30s when this happened. The other bar patrons must have really cared a lot about Anna Marie.
Right. They were in their early 20s at the time, but still, yeah, it seems crazy. I don't see how it's possible. I don't know what occurred with the police department, but it seems like there was a lot of problems, apparently, with the Wilton Manor's police department at the time. It was a lot of evidence. There was seminal fluid, apparently, pubic hair. Allegedly, they either can't find the evidence or the evidence was lost, which is perplexing because you're never allowed to throw away murder evidence. What the sister is telling me, and I haven't got confirmation yet, is that they said something to do with when they switched stations, but the Wilton Manor's police station was built in 2010, and I highly doubt anybody was throwing away murder evidence then. I'm hoping that it was misplaced.
Well, it doesn't sound like a large police department, so I find it really hard to believe that they would just lose such valuable evidence. I mean, do they have so many homicides that they would just lose evidence?
Very strange. And allegedly, Broward County took over their homicide investigations because of some disaster that happened there. I don't know the details, but it has to be somewhere. And there's DNA on that evidence, as well as there's a possibility that there's still a slide at the coroner's office with DNA.
Now, how far have you looked into this DNA evidence? Have you reached out to anyone in Florida?
I've reached out to Broward, have not heard back. The only thing I've done thus far, other than some backgrounds on some people involved, and some of them I know, I just contacted the genealogy site that's doing all the DNA. So if there is a slide of DNA, hopefully we can get it uploaded into a genealogy site to have it tested. And the only thing that they require is that the police department's on board with it. I was hoping to get some publicity on it like this prior to contacting them to say, hey, there's a rejuvenated interest here. If there is a slide of DNA, we can check that.
So you don't actually know if there is any DNA on this case that's available for testing?
Believe it or not, her sister Fran knows more than it seems everybody does. And I've seen this in emails and everything. She gave me all the emails between them. And she said her, in speaking with the coroner, they said they have a slide of seminal fluid or something to that effect that they could get DNA from. Now, this was a coroner 10 years ago or whatever, but she's never stopped talking to people along the way. She even talked to a police department when Broward got it. She got it pushed to Broward, and they put it on the back burner, but I guess they said they didn't have anything at the coroner's office, and she said, yes, they do, because I called them, and she gave it to them. I don't know what's going on down there.
So you're saying that Fran spoke to somebody from the coroner's office, and they did say that they had a DNA slide, and this was 10 years ago?
I'm giving a rough estimate. They could have said they had a slide 5 years ago. it was a little while ago she talked to them about that. The interesting thing has nothing to do with this, but it's just interesting if you don't already know. But a year prior to this murder, the Wilton Manors Police Department had a police officer that was a serial killer.
A serial killer cop in Florida? No, I don't recall ever hearing about that.
Google it. Unbelievable story. He was actually had two women tied up while he was in uniform in the woods. And he told the chief, because the chief called him and he said, I screwed up. And then they figured out he was a serial killer. I figured how many women he killed. He got arrested a year prior to that. But I guess it just shows what was going on in the department at the time. Not exactly squared away. The county took away their ability to ever investigate homicides again. I haven't got into that yet, but that last part of it is true.
So then Broward County would end up taking over the case. Is that correct?
Yes, it would be Broward. And I know Broward did have. It's just they have an unbelievably screwed up history. And there was some people were implying at the time. I guess there was a lot of police officers that hung out at that bar. Could have been one of them. Could have turned a blind eye. I don't want to make that leap, but the department, I guess, was a disaster. Notorious. So there's a lot of strange things. I was in touch with one of the reporters who wrote an article, hoping he'd remember it, and he didn't remember. He said he was so many murders in South Florida in the 80s, he doesn't specifically remember too much. And I guess the detective that had the case, his name's Wiley, he won't talk to the sister. He said, I'm not talking about that case. Strange.
So do you know why he's refused to help Fran figure out who killed her sister?
He's retired and he won't tell her that. He just, that's all he gave her. And I guess she talked to the new detective from Broward, who I haven't been able to get a hold of because he got transferred to somewhere else a while ago. And he seemed like he wanted to help out. But there's another factor. There was a group of guys that were known to her that came from Massachusetts as well, that were allegedly fleeing from doing a robbery in Massachusetts. They were there during the time, and they left immediately after the homicide the next day, were never questioned by the police. And one of those guys is the guy, Tom, that reached out to the girl on Facebook. So there's that factor, too.
Do you think there's a good possibility that the killer is still alive? I mean, it was, what, almost 40 years ago?
I do. From everything I've heard, I don't know that I believe that it is a stranger. I think it's more likely one of the people involved. She also had a boyfriend at the time. And when her sister said that when he showed up at the house, he was flipping out because the police said she was dead and he had scratch marks all over him. Yeah, so between him and this group of guys and everybody was there and they're fleeing a robbery, it's just my gut tells me it's probably somebody she knew.
Can you tell me about the sketch? It looks like the police had one of what the potential killer must have looked like or could have looked like.
No, nobody. But that sketch apparently, I think, was after they hypnotized all the employees. So all these people remembered her with somebody, but they didn't remember much specifics. And they hypnotized everybody and they came up with something. But I've looked at the possibility, too, of like all the serial killers that were around Florida in the 80s and things like that. And pretty much between MO and time frame and all kinds of things, none of them really make any sense. There was one guy that I did think could have been a possibility only because he committed a murder that was similar with a girl coming out of a bar. He had been in the area. There's too many variables with the people she knows. She called her sister, I guess, the night before her murder and said she had to tell her something and she was scared or something to that effect.
Was Anna Marie involved in any type of criminal activity, drugs, prostitution, or anything like that?
Apparently, her sister asked the police, can you tell me, was my sister involved in anything criminal? No. Was she any drug charges or street walking or anything like that? No. So as far as everybody says, she just drank a lot. Really hard upbringing, kids were all in foster care, split up, and apparently she drank a bunch.
Based on everything that you've told me, it sounds to me like the motivation for her death was probably some type of sexual assault, because we know she didn't have any money on her. So the motivation probably wasn't robbery.
Yeah, it was. Interestingly, the serial killer, the thing that drew my attention to him is he committed a murder in that area, kind of, that girl coming out of a bar, but in another murder in another state where he just sodomized the woman only, and that's what happened to Ann. He was sodomized only, which... you do enough of these, I don't think that's terribly common. It's either both or it's just vaginal, like just sodomizing her. I don't know. It's a different kind of MO.
It sounds to me like the man that did this, it's probably not his first time. I'm going to say there's probably other victims out there. There might even be a victim or two that has actually survived.
Oh, I think so. He tore her hair from her head, and she was laced face down, sort of to, if you're going to walk up the stairs to the right. So if you look at it from Google Earth, you'll see there's hedges around it. To the right, kind of halfway in the hedges, face down. And her pants were put back up. But obviously the person was sadistic and had a lot of rage. I agree with you.
So then we both agree that this wasn't his first time. From what I understand about this case and what I've read about it, when this guy came into the bar, no one knew who he was, but everyone else in the bar knew each other. But he kind of stood out because nobody had ever seen him before.
Right. Which I feel like they would have had a lot of good people giving really good descriptions in that scenario. It's funny. Everybody remembers this guy that they don't know, but they don't remember. I can't get over this guy, Tom, reaching out through Facebook. To me, it's almost like a guilty conscience thing. What would possess you 30 plus years after a murder to reach out to who you think is the woman's sister and just lead with, hey, I was in the bar this night, your sister got murdered, and put yourself in the bar? It's strange, strange.
There's no way to trace this guy and find out who he is?
Oh, no, I did. Yeah. So I didn't talk to him at the time because I didn't want to interfere with a Florida investigation, which I was told at the time was ongoing cold, but it really wasn't. But her sister, Fran, reached out to him, and apparently he cried on the phone and sobbed and said, I would never hurt anybody, and all these things. Crazy. But it just seemed, like she said, it just seems so extreme, like his emotion and the way, I can't get over you reaching out to somebody and saying that. You don't even know them.
That's really strange how he would just come out of the blue and just
insert yourself into a murder investigation.
Can you tell me what's become of Tom? Where's he at now?
He lives in Florida.
At this point in time, do you think he has any valid information?
I'm hoping that this rocks the boat a little and he gets a hold of it and sees it. Maybe stirs up a little guilt in him before I can talk to him. But I'm planning on talking to him at some point. But I know he trolls Facebook, obviously. I know something about it is on his mind. It wasn't like he knew her well. For him to be reaching out and saying that over the years, he didn't really know her at all. He was friends of her friends. So it just makes me think maybe he knows something. He admitted he was there, hung out at the bar, but I think he was flip-flopping on that. But there's a lot of strange things. He had a Pompano Beach address at one point himself. That was the address on the envelope. The address on the envelope began with a T. They said it looked like Tony, T-O-N-I. But this guy goes by Tommy, T-O-M-I. Do you know what I mean?
It sounds to me like Tom could know a little bit more than what he's ever said about this case.
He wasn't a regular. He's not from there. He was down there hiding out. But it could have been somebody with him. Cousin, a brother. He's been living down there since.
Yes, it's very interesting just to come out of nowhere like that.
In this day and age, everybody's seen a million crime shows, right? You know goddamn right. If you're sending a message like that, you're inserting yourself into that investigation. And you're doing it for a reason. Maybe because you just need to get it off your chest and you're waiting for somebody to ask the right question. I don't think he was taunting anybody because he was like pathetically crying and talking about what a victim he's been in life the whole time.
Yes, that makes sense. So he's either crying for attention because he knows something about it, or he's just one of those guys that likes to put himself into an investigation for no apparent reason.
Yeah, I think he wants to say whatever it is. He's got kids now. He's got a daughter. I truly believe he might have some information that will be very helpful to resolving this for the family. And I hope that he'll do the right thing and do the good thing and come forward. Because I do believe he knows something.
In your opinion, how come Broward County authorities haven't solved this case yet?
I don't know. Apparently they did tell her. I don't remember how many cases that they had at the time. It was a ton, cold cases. But Fran had to go to the district attorney themselves and get them to get somebody else to do it. And they got Broward to do it. And I guess they were on board. And then they basically said, we don't really have anything. And she said to them, why don't you interview all these people? And they said, what are we going to do? They live in other places, Massachusetts and all this stuff. And she said, why don't you call the state police? And they did. That's what we would do in Massachusetts. We would call the other state and ask them to go interview them for us. Unless, of course, we didn't feel like if I felt like I didn't get a good feel for them on the phone, like they gave a shit, I'd probably go myself. But other than that, we'd just call them and say, hey, can you come over there and do us a courtesy and interview them? The least you could do. That's really a pathetic formality because they don't even know the case. How good are they going to interview them? But at least you're doing something. I can only think that they had a massive caseload and this one's, I don't know, older or not as much publicity on it. The only thing that gets these things going is places like your podcast. I've told her that for years. When I was first retiring, I said, maybe I'll start a podcast and get it out there with the podcast because podcasts, I love them. I listen to them. They're so informative. People really give a shit. They're well done. And then ironically, you reached out to me and I said, oh, awesome. I'm glad there's people like you out there doing it.
I certainly feel like it's the best way to get a story out. As a matter of fact, there's a radio show called The Brian Thomas Show. And I do a cold case every other week. I talk about one with his listeners. And there was one in Cincinnati that I just did not too long ago. It happened in 1982 in downtown Cincinnati. But interesting enough, a police officer who was familiar with the case called the radio station and said, hey, I know something about this case. And he left his phone number for me to call him. I haven't called him yet, but I'm definitely planning on calling him eventually to see if he knows anything that could be useful. Because the granddaughter is trying to find out what happened to her grandmother. She's been looking for answers for years, and she hasn't been able to find anybody that's been able to help her. So you just never know. Podcasts, radio interviews, you just never know who's listening or who might have information about a case.
I gave some input on one that I think helped solve it that I was watching on TV. Very long story, but it was to do with a girl in a barrel, and I knew of one in New Hampshire, and it connected. I don't know that it was just me, but I at least contributed a little to it. I said, hey, I heard this, I read that then, and it was totally outside of the country, so whatever. It does get it out there, and I even look at all the web sleuths. People shouldn't discount them. A lot of them are really smart, and they come up with some incredible theories.
Is there a Facebook page for this case?
I just put it up today. It's Justice for Anna Marie Mullen.
That sounds great. The last thing that I would want to know is, what's the end game here for you? Are you just trying to get publicity for the case? Or are you using your skills as a former police officer to try to solve this case? And I'd also like to know, is this case solvable?
As I've told the family from the beginning, this is obviously a huge uphill battle. It's a different jurisdiction. There's not a lot of evidence. Some may have been lost. But I'm just hoping I can use my skills and knowledge and try to contribute and help them get as much exposure on the case as we can to try to jar somebody's memory and hopefully finally get a resolution to the murder. Or we can work with the police department or the DA's office, whoever's the keeper of the evidence, to try to see if we can locate that crucial evidence that probably contains DNA to hopefully resolve it that way. There was a lot of people there that knew each other. You know, it wasn't she was a stranger in a strange place. There was a lot of people that knew her. She knew a lot of people. Everyone was familiar with the area and the people. I just feel like this can be solved.
For the conclusion of this story, Fran Cubes shared the frustrations that she has experienced over nearly 40 years of trying to figure out who killed her sister. Doesn't the coroner's office still have a DNA sample?
Yes.
What can you tell me about that sample?
I was fighting with Broward County. I just had enough of them. So there is DNA. But again, you have to have the agency that's investigating the homicide be involved in the homicide. If that agency is not willing to work with outside agencies or not willing to communicate with other people, then your case is going nowhere. And that's what we've come across all these years, is that don't know why, have no clue as to why they won't tell us the truth. It's not bad enough the girl was brutally raped and murdered, but here you are, the soldiers of the victims, so to speak. You are the men and women who are supposed to stand up for these poor victims and say, we got your back.
Can you tell me why the police don't make an arrest? If they have a DNA sample at the coroner's office, how come it hasn't been tested? Can't the DNA be sent to one of those genealogy testing locations?
I'm pretty sure they could. Again, I only fall on deaf ears. They don't want to hear from us. They don't want to deal with us. They just hope the animal in case would just go to the wayside. They don't want to hear about it. And I've been working this case for 40 years.
Do you have any theories about who killed your sister?
Yes.
Do you think it was someone who knew her?
Yes. The person was in Florida and immediately left Florida when the police wanted to question them. And when I asked Florida why they wouldn't speak to him, he said, well, he's there and we're here. So I called Massachusetts State Police. He said, both police departments said, all they have to do is do a formal request and we'd be happy to talk to those people. Officers outside of Florida have tried to help us, tried to encourage us. I've talked to hundreds of law enforcement for serial killers, for you name it, I've done it. And they all, at the end, say the same thing. Don't stop fighting for your sister, Franny. But where do you go with the people you need the most? I'm like, see you later. We're out of here. Where does the family go?
Have you reached out to any of your local politicians for help?
Oh, please, yes. I have statements from the Florida district attorney. They say they don't recognize a homicide. She's not recognized in the state of Florida as a homicide victim. How does that happen? I don't know. But that's what they told me, that the DA's office called the attorney general's office to see if they could help and intercede. Called governors, called congressmen, called you name it. Oh, the AG of Florida. AG of Florida said it's not their job. Called the governor's office, got the same response. The governor cannot oversee municipality policing. That is their job and their job only. Those people don't want to hear from you. They don't care that your loved one's been murdered. They don't care that you have been fighting for 40 years for justice for your loved one. So who's the overseer of that? I thought it was the governor. It's not his job neither. So I don't know who families like me go to in the state of Florida when you need some help. All you want is justice for your loved one. That's it. You ain't asking for the moon and the stars and all the other nonsense. They have the power to do so. They choose not to use the power. That's how I see it.
So how did your sister end up living in Florida?
So she was down there at the Air Force Base. When she got out of the Air Force, she stayed down there.
When was the last time you discussed this case with authorities?
County Detective Walter Foster, and that would be probably 3 years ago. Because, again, you're talking to the wall. His thing was, well, I got to work this case on my own time. What in the hell does that mean? Like, when you get off duty, you'll work this case. I've been doing this a long time. I've talked to a lot of law enforcement involving in this case. You think that ain't the first time I heard some nonsense like that? Please. It didn't matter what I threw at him. Didn't matter what means I asked him to follow up on. The envelope in the bar, that envelope, that information on that envelope is my link. And I kept calling Broward County. I called Will Anna, talked to their commander blocker, told him I needed, we got everything. That's all they ever said to me. I called them for 28 years, and Will Anna always said, do you have evidence? Yes. Do you have this? Yes. Do you have that? Always yes. Never no. Right up to the last time I spoke to him, which was October 26th of 2012, when the case was being transferred. And I said to him, you better send everything to Broward County, including her evidence. Everything. Called him back probably a month later to say, where's my evidence? Never response. The mayor of Wilton Manor was a guy named Resnick at the time. Begging him to find out where's the problem, where lies the issue within this police department. His only response back to me was, it seems like you've talked to every law enforcement agent in my department. And I wrote back, yes, I have. So all I want you to do is answer my question, like, where's this, where's that, where's all this stuff? And his only thing was, you talk to everybody here. And that was it. And never heard back from him either. I'll get back to you, never heard back from him either. So that's how it went with this entire police department. And now Broward County, now whether Broward County was told to in that agreement that was made November 7, 2012. Now, remember, to get a case transferred out of a district into a new district, district attorney has to sign off. Somebody has to sign off. Bigger up there has to know. That agreement, because I was told by Officer Efron Torres, who was with Broward County at the time, he said, your sister, he goes, we're in the middle of shifting cases from Wilton Manor to Broward. And I said to him, my sister better be one of those cases. So me and him chatted for a while, and he wrote me back saying, got your sister's case today, waiting for the evidence to come with. That never arrived. So I stayed on Wilton Manor behind for a while, but again, you're talking to deaf ears. So it didn't matter what we try to do. I'm telling you, if I could get a law enforcement agency in Florida to follow what we did, they'd be making an arrest.
And from what I understand, the evidence never came with the file because all the evidence has been lost. Is that correct?
I don't know. I don't know if it's sitting in a storage unit somewhere, if it's mismarked. You got to remember, the most honest thing I think they ever said to me was, your sister, the district attorney's office said to me was, your sister's not listed as a homicide. So we don't recognize that number. So I really went back to a homicide number from the ME's office, which was 1550, is that number. So I called the detective that just took over the case, and I said, listen, request a 1550 number, not the 82-776. Because who's to say that number even existed? Even though it says, they say it's her homicide number, no one recognizes that number. And they say it's an incomplete number, meaning that there should be some more digits along with that 82-766. There's missing numbers. So I don't know. I can't get Wilton Manor to talk to us. I don't know. It's so beyond frustrating. It makes your heart turn sour to law enforcement. It really does. I tell you, I've talked to hundreds of law enforcement agents about this case in 40 years. Amazing people. Talk to you, helped you, get you along, help you through some issues. Let's do this. You got to try that. This police department? Nothing. I have no idea what their problem is.
Have you tried reaching out to the media or organizations that help people with situations like yours?
Well, Anna belongs to an outlet called Project Cocaine. Are you familiar with them?
Yes.
Okay. So she's part of that. I spoke with Ryan when Ryan was first setting it up because we did a book on like a bunch of families. 22 of us did books, one book, but it was like 22 family stories about unsolved homicides. And the families wrote the stories. And then a publisher published the stories. And that's how I met Ryan. And Ryan Beckman, salt of the earth type of guy, really good guy, lost his dad to an unsolved homicide. So he started Project Cold Case. And the reason why he did that was because you call law enforcement 100 times over and they don't know about the case. They don't want to know about the case. They have no idea where stuff is. So Ryan decided that he would build Project Cold Case. And Project Cold Case would then, you could send them your family's information of your loved one, and they would store it and promote it. They would let your families go on and talk about it and post on it. And then they did clips on it, did stories on them, just to give families like a view where families could go in and talk about their loved one's story. So thank God for Project Cold Case. Thank God for Ryan Beckman. I got to tell you, this guy, amazing, because there are no outlets, not the FBI, not any that does cold cases. There's nobody that stores cold case information. The FBI does a lot of things, but they do not do cold cases. That's why he decided to build Project Cold Case, where cold case families could go, and that would be their place to view their cases so that the public could know about them, because so many cases have been lost to whatever, as far as law enforcement goes, lack of doing their jobs, lack of care, lack of keeping the evidence, which is supposed to be mandatory in all states. But in Florida, if you're a cop, you don't have to follow the rules, I guess. I don't know. But what's going on in Anna's case. They don't have to follow the rules. As far as the state of Florida is concerned, Anna does not exist. So what do you do with a case that they help make disappear? And that's, to me, the biggest spit in the face that anybody could do to my family. As far as I'm concerned, they stepped on her neck and buried her case on purpose. And these are people who wear the badges. That's what they did to my sister. To me, I'm not somebody that's going to stand around and let you step on my dead sister's neck and bury her case. Nope. And that's why I fight. I personally contacted and wrote every agency, every politician, every body that a family member could reach out to say, just, dear God, help me. Dear God, help me. What do I do? Who can I reach out to? Who can help me? That's all we want. We ain't here to bash nobody. We ain't here to make nobody feel bad. We ain't here to... Here's what we want. We want some help. But you have to stay connected with them no matter... It's because they're the only link, because they're the authority on the state. So you have to stay connected. You wish you could walk away. You can't, because they're the authority on your sister's case. So you have to constantly... You go back, plead for them to help you, beg them, because she deserves justice. What happened to my sister was brutal, brutal. I have the autopsy photos. I have the ME report. I've seen everything. There's no secrets here. There's no secrets for them either. So them saying, oh, we can't discuss that because it's, you know, it's this, that. Listen, man, I've seen the horror. So we can have a conversation, because all I really want is what's right for my sister. So she mattered to me. She mattered to my family. She mattered to her friends. That's the most important thing in the world.
My final question for you would be, for anyone that's out there listening to this podcast, if they know anything about what happened to your beloved sister, Anna Marie, what would you say to that person or persons?
Just come forward and tell us what you know. Don't be afraid. If you know something and you're afraid, call me. I'll come get you. I'll come make sure you're safe every day of your life for the rest of your life. Come see me, because she deserves that. And if you were her friend, or you were somebody who said you cared about her, you can't care about her and hold that type of secret. You just can't. So if somebody knows something, come tell us. If you don't want to talk to us, call local law enforcement. Tell them you know about a case and you need help getting to the right authority. Whatever you need to help you step over that stumbling block, you have the full support of everybody who loves Anna. We will stand with you and hold you and help you cough up the words if that's what we need to do. If you know something, come forward. That's all we can ask.
And that concludes the story of Anna Marie Mullen. Why would anyone want to kill a 22-year-old Air Force veteran with no known enemies? Can you help identify her killer? Her sister Fran is desperate for the truth. If you have any information about this case, please contact the Broward County Sheriff's Department at 954-493-TIPS. And if you would like more information about this case, please visit the Justice for Anna Marie Mullen Facebook page. I will also provide this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.